Welcome to Two Frugal Dudes, where we're sharing how we manage our family's personal finances to simplify how you can put your hard-earned money to work. This is episode 83, where we're going to get rid of your timeshare, reveal the truth about timeshares, and combat your healthcare costs with your diet. Gordon Newton is a timeshare expert and author of The Consumer's Guide to Timeshare Exit, helping people end their timeshare ownerships as president and co-founder of Newton Group Transfers at newtongrouptransfers.com. Welcome to the show, Gordon. It's great to have you.
Oh, thanks so much for having me, guys. I appreciate being on.
Well, let's get things kicked off with a segment of Where Did Our Money Go? And this is where we take a quick glimpse into last week's transactions and talk about any notable income or expenses that took place in our budget. Oh, and about 2 weeks ago, I think I talked about when we had to reschedule a podcast recording because my son had like a we may or may not have been an asthma attack. We're not sure yet, but basically we took him to his pediatrician, and in the middle of that, they said, you know, he needs to go to the hospital, and we had to basically, they had an ambulance transport him over to the hospital immediately. So, Kevin, when that happened, you had mentioned, that scenario had happened to you in the past, and you were like, hold on a minute, ambulance transfer, that sounds expensive. So I had actually just gotten the bill in the mail yesterday. So yeah, it looks like we owe about $1,000 for the ambulance transport from our pediatrician to the hospital. So it was like a base price of about $831 and then $13.50 per mile after that.
That's a horrible taxi.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, it sounds horrible, right? And I mean, you know, you got to do what you got to do, right? I mean, I'm sure when they notice something that seems out of the norm, and you know, the doctors have to call the ambulance, and it's probably for good cause, right? I mean, I can't have a bitter taste in my mouth, I guess, for something like this. Yes, we could have probably drove him, but at the same time, I am thankful for, you know, our service members out there that do stuff like this. So I'll just have to bite this one and take care of it. But that was definitely on the higher end of what I thought. And I haven't got the other bills yet for, you know, the emergency room and anything else.
Just remember, be in the moment there, right? I mean, because if you were in that moment and they said it's going to cost you $800, you would have happily paid it right then and there. After the fact, when everything's okay, you know?
So. Yeah, because, you know, think about it, right when they told us, we didn't know what it was at that time either, right? My son was like wheezing, and, you know, the pediatrician put the stethoscope on him and was like, oh, he's really sick. We need to call an ambulance right away. We're like, what? At that point, like you just said, in the moment, we probably would have done anything. Yeah, let's get him to the hospital quick. You know, we're scared. You know, we were scared at that point. So, yeah, absolutely, right. In hindsight, you know, we're like, oh, well, it was no big deal. We found out after it may have been asthma, may not. They were able to get him, good with the albuterol and everything. So, but yeah, absolutely. It was probably totally worth it.
I've had that with my daughter too. She's 7 years old out here in Arizona. The allergies are just crazy.
And
I've had that same trip. And, eventually I think maybe one of these days what they'll do is they'll start handing the credit card swipe machines right to the ambulance driver.
Because right.
After you've had time to settle down and you're not in the moment, I mean, in the moment, you're willing to give them anything. You know, you'd pay twice that. Let's go.
Right.
So. Or like Uber, it just pops up on your phone when you're done and goes, oh, yeah, your bill fare plus distance is $1,000. Would you like to tip? And yeah. Go, no, I don't want a tip.
That was too funny. So, yeah, that's where my money went. What about you, Kevin?
Well, actually, I've been spending some time hiring on a site called peopleperhour.com. I have some different tasks in my business I need to offload, and they're not necessarily in the skill set of anyone I already have working for me. So I went to People Per Hour. It's a site kind of like Upwork or Elance or whatever it used to be called, where people come in and they'll do odd jobs for you for really low rates. Type of stuff I'm working on is some print design, and it's one-off things that I really don't need to build a relationship with anyone to have done on a regular basis. It's just something I need to have done in the next couple of days. So I went on there, posted a job, got about 15 proposals overnight, and went through, had a couple chats with a few people, and selected a person at about $30 an hour to do just a couple hours worth of work for me. I look at it as an entrepreneur. It's a very cost-effective way to get little tasks done that I would probably spend days and weeks just dreading over and trying to get picture perfect, I can just give it to someone else and pay a little bit of money and the entire thing gets done for me. But it's also a really good tool for folks out there who want to earn a little extra money, because you can come in here, if you have any sort of skill set, you're able to look at all these jobs and basically place bids. Say, oh, I'll do that for $30 an hour, or I'll do the entire thing for you, fixed bid, $300. And you can create these conversations with different people and build relationships. And I think if you do it for long enough, you can build a pretty decent reputation.
Absolutely. I've actually used, so you mentioned Upwork in the past, also Fiverr. It's another common one,
yeah.
Right? Yeah. Like, and some of this stuff becomes a commodity, right? For some of the basic, you know, like, you know, I need a logo for my company or something, right? Or, you know, I need a basic change to a website or something, or a WordPress site or something, right? Or print stuff like you mentioned. Yeah. And that, and I'm glad you mentioned the other end of it, because you can get stuff pretty affordable, one thing, right? But then the earning potential side of it too, like, or someone that's like fresh out of college, or maybe just, you know, trying to try something new. Maybe they already have a job and they really want to get into this other industry. It's a good way to kind of start learning those skills and, you know, just find a few low effort, kind of low paying gigs out there to eventually build a relationship and build your resume at the same time, because really you could put this stuff on your resume, right? I mean, you can make a little money on it. You can find real world scenarios where you're helping someone. And I know personally, I have hired people on Upwork for like little jobs, and then I've continuously gone back to them and rehired them for like website modifications and stuff. I used to build websites. So Gordon, Kevin and I are both software engineers, and I used to build websites for, you know, local companies and friends of mine and stuff. And then I decided to get out of that business personally. And what I did was I would actually still say, okay, I'll do it for you, but I'm gonna get some help and I'm gonna outsource some of this. So I would go to Upwork and, you know, I would be like basically the IT project manager at that point and get the requirements and everything, and then have someone else actually get the work done. And I build a, and I had a few people that would help me do that kind of work on an ongoing basis. So kind of worked the system there, but it worked out well. And I'm sure they appreciated whoever was on the other end making the money, and the work still got done.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, that's a skilled trade, right? And I've used Fiverr myself here at our company. We had to develop a little pamphlet. We needed it done quickly. We were going to an event, and we had to quickly develop a quick trifold. And we went to Fiverr. It was done, and it worked fantastic. And we still use that guy for some work today, because once you find somebody, you're right. You want to go back to that honey hole again. You want to use them again, because having a swing and a miss, it's no, right? So no, we use Fiverr in the past as well too.
That's awesome. So Gordon, any notable income or expenses maybe in the past week or two you want to talk about?
Well, yeah, it's funny. We actually just made an investment back in the organization. We just bought new iMacs for the office. So that was ooh, something that was really a long time coming and overdue, to be honest with you. We had a lot of complaints about the computers being slow and everything else. So that was a hefty expense, but it was a long time coming. And you know, just in seeing everybody's excitement, knowing that they were coming, that was I'm going to look at that as an investment in the equipment and the tools.
Good for you. Yeah, Kevin and I were just talking about that. Our laptops, actually, right before this call, how, like, you know, like, we work on our laptops all the time as software engineers. So, like, it's worth a little bit extra money for us, you know, to put that, buy something quality that's going to last a little longer, perform well, right? And that we know has everything we need. Where I, in the past, I used to, you know, go try and, you know, get some of the lower end stuff with the, or build my own. And it was just, you know, I kept running into all kind of problems year after year. So I'm glad I finally bit the bullet too, on the personal side of things.
Yeah, we had originally, some of these were pretty old. Some of them must have been 3 or 4 years old, and they were all-in-ones, and they were originally designed just for work to be done online, because our CRM is web-based. And so we just figured we would never have a need to open up any spreadsheets or any Word docs or anything else, and, you know, for that particular area. And that was just a mistake. But, you know, we rode that bus until the wheels fell off.
There you go.
Sure.
So, Gordon, we're just meeting you really for the first time, and I'm sure many of our listeners are meeting you for the first time as well. Do you mind taking us on a little bit of a history trip through your financial journey Tell us, go all the way back to the beginning and tell you how did you get to where you are today? And I think more importantly, if you could go back to younger Gordon and give him a little bit of advice, what thing would you tell Gordon to do differently?
My motto and what we say at our organization here too, and keep in mind, I've known my business partner since the sixth grade. You know, we go way back with one another. We're cut from the same cloth, but find a way is what I would say kind of sums up my financial story and really my business story. You know, starting out, I was the youngest of five. Didn't have money for college. My folks had put my oldest brother through college, and when he had got out, he had just decided to go another path. He wasn't really at that particular time using his degree. And my dad wanted me to be an electrician, and I didn't want to do that. And but coming out of high school, I didn't have the grades, so I had to find a way. I had to start at community college. I had to pay for that. I sold my car, moved in with my buddy at the time, who had a sweet deal in some government subsidized housing. So he slept on the couch, and I slept on the floor with the cockroaches. And that's how I got through my my first year and a half of community college out of Grand Rapids, Michigan. And you know, funny story, my roommate and buddy at that time too, he's a very successful business owner as well. Owns a auto manufacturing plant now, doing 20 plus million a year. And wow. We often look back and kind of laugh, but you know, you have that mentality to find a way, and that's something that my dad instilled in me. You know, from a young age, look, son, if you want to do it, go ahead. You can do anything you want to, but you're just going to have to find a way. And that applied for anything. You know, if I had rode my bike, you know, an hour across town, and he gave me a half an hour to get home for dinner or else, I remember his last words to me on the phone was, "You better find a way to get here." And that's what you do, right? I mean, I think that's what anybody does in life. I mean, you're gonna be hit with curveballs. So you're going to be hit with setbacks, and you're just going to have to find a way. And, you know, going through school, I got accepted to Michigan State. I had enough money and financial loans to get through 1 year. And my friends thought I was foolish for signing up for 1 year at a, you know, at a an expensive institution. You know, what are you doing? And I said, I'm going to figure it out. And, you know, just kind of laughed at me and rolled my eyes. But I found a way to pay it off year after year after year. You can accomplish anything you want to if you dig in. Sometimes you got to be willing to sleep with the cockroaches and some government subsidized housing, but you'll figure it out. Stay hungry, right? Find right. a way. So, you know, so that took me through college. And then I got out of school. I started my, I first had a job in sales. I was selling telecommunications. You know, was living high off the hog, making 78 grand a year. Out of college, you know, being a fancy salesman, and we were selling big connections to the internet, T1 lines. You remember those?
Oh yeah.
And now you get the same speed through. You know, we're selling T1 lines and T3s, it was that actually took me to. I always knew I had that entrepreneurial spirit from a young age, and I always knew I wanted to do my own thing. So I had that paper that would get me through the door. I had my college degree. I had some sales experience, and I was breaking the sales record, so that I was actually having to change my compensation plan. And anybody who's ever had to go through that, they know the pure, really, I wouldn't say frustration. I would use the word anger. You know, they keep raising the bar a little bit higher, so they mess with your commission. Never mess with a sales guy's commission structure. That's one surefire way to lose them. So. But this brings me up to around 2003, and this was when voice over IP was just starting to work. So when I worked at the I don't even know what the heck it was called anymore. It's been so long since I talked about it. But when I worked there, I talked to the tech guys, and this was, you know, oh, voice over IP is never going to work. And then it went to, boy, they're making some advances to finally it was working. And then it actually became mainstream through Vonage. Now, Vonage was still new at the time. Like, when I say mainstream, I don't even know how I heard about it. I think it was on maybe the radio or something, or, you know, I found it on the internet. But once I realized it worked, I wanted to create a virtual contact center, a virtual call center. When I went to Michigan State, they had a brick and mortar call center that was there that students would go to. And I never worked there, but one of my buddies did. And they would talk about how they just, you know, half-assed it, right? I mean, I'm there, I'm making a buck, and I'm making these cold calls. I thought, my goodness, if I could just find somebody, you know, there's 300 million people roughly in the United States. If I could find 100 of the best and brightest experienced people in different situations, well, then my goodness, then I would have lightning in a bottle. But I needed to be able to tie all that in through a robust CRM and instill a culture to make people feel as though they were part of something bigger than themselves. If you're going to work in Ohio and your next counterpart is working in California, you need to have a connection. So I knew that culture was very key. And I knew that I had to recruit some very talented people in the business world. And so I knew my business partners from, like I said, the sixth grade. And so I knew that we were cut from the same cloth, and I knew they were intelligent, caring people. And so that's when we formed the Newton Group, and we started a virtual contact center.
Wow. And did you just get up and quit, or were you doing this as a side hustle, and then eventually said, okay, I think we can make this work, and then
no.
Make a leap?
No, man. I had to, again, you're talking to a guy who slept on the floor with cockroaches.
You were comfortable taking a risk, huh?
Oh, man. So I, 28 years old, I had my friends, my family going, are you crazy? You know, you're going to move back in with mom and dad. You know, I mean, what in the world are you thinking, man? And I just knew that if I didn't give it my all, I couldn't do it as a side hustle. I wouldn't do it. Wow. And I knew I had to jump. That was just me. There's other plenty of people, you know, people tell you it's a smart thing to do the side hustle. And you know what? Good for them if they can do that. But I knew me, and I knew that if I was going to do it and if it was going to work and work well, I had to be all in. So, yeah, man, I went back to being broke again for a good number of years. So
it's good to hear that, though. Like you said, it's a personal choice, right? And it's a personal decision as far as, you know, the way you work, right? And everybody has to know that, you know. And
yeah.
You almost had me talking token ring and ISDN there for a minute, but didn't want to go that far back.
Yeah, no, I sold ISDN lines too. Yep.
Oh, what a great story. And well, now, so Newton Group transfers. I know one of the things I had the pleasure of talking to with Anthony on your team back in FinCon was timeshares. And one of the things me and him have sat down with someone that I think was either trying to get out of their timeshare or traded it around. I forget what the exact discussion was. And then he had mentioned that's what his company did, and the company that you're the president and co-founder of. So I would love to hear more about this topic because, you know, I hear so much mixed information about timeshares out there. And I know Kevin, I think his parents may have a timeshare he mentioned in the past. So I'm sure he's interested in this as well. But let's start off. Let's work our way there and start off with, can you explain the different types of timeshares that are out there and why do people want to get out of them?
Well, I mean, look, I won't get too much into the weeds as far as the different types of timeshares. It's shared ownership at the end of the day, whether it comes in the form of a deeded timeshare ownership or the form of points or a club membership or whatever it is, no matter what contract you have, you're sharing that ownership, you're sharing that space with someone else. So typically you'll purchase 1 week. They're moving away from the deeded weeks where you actually had 1 week. There's 52 weeks in a year. And so if you had a week 37, that was your week that you could go to every time of the year. That was blocked off. Now they're moving more towards points. Quite frankly, they can sell more. You can sell more timeshare that way because now it's no longer you were confined to the 52 weeks on the calendar. However, it was 52 weeks, you know, times what, you know, 150 rooms. But now they're actually moving more towards a points based system. You know, you can actually use some of those points for cruises or, you know, hotels or other vacation type of things. But yeah, so that's your basic timeshare ownership from a 30,000 foot view. As far as why do people want out of them? Look, man, it varies, right? Some people have used their timeshare faithfully for 15 years. They loved it. They just want out. They're not going anymore. But there's an obligation to those timeshares. You must continue to pay your maintenance fees, any special assessments or taxes. And if you're not using that timeshare, boy, it becomes a real burden real quick. as those maintenance fees are rising faster than the rate of inflation. They're going up every year.
Yeah, Anthony was telling me when we talked, he was like, you know, over 1 million people want to get out of their timeshare ownership. I was like, wow, like that's a crazy stat.
That's the estimate. Yeah, that's the estimate. You know, there's roughly, you know, 9 million timeshare owners out there. And, you know, the estimate that's floating out there is around 1 million. But when you thought a number like that, that's where it really starts bringing in the sharks. You know, there's a lot of scam artists out there saying that they know how to get you out of a timeshare contract. You know, I'm a former timeshare owner, so I know how to get out of it. No, you don't. You know, I mean, I used to sell timeshares, so I know how to get out of it. That doesn't make you an expert, right? It just doesn't. I mean, how we got into it is we actually started working. We provided CRM and sales support. So we designed the very first customer relationship management software specifically for the timeshare exit industry. And so a lot of the terms that are still used in this industry today were spawned from us when we started doing this back in 2005. So, you know, we have a very ground up understanding of what it takes to get people out of a timeshare contract and the process it takes as well, too.
It's funny. I've never heard anyone really talk about timeshares in a positive light. It's always actually no. You know what? I take that back. I do have some extended family who have a timeshare that they use on a regular basis, and they've never said anything bad about it. But it really brings a mention the popular consensus with timeshares is that they're usually bad because people get into them. They go to it. You all hear the story. You go to the fancy dinner or you go to the resort. You think you're going to have fun, but you spend 8 hours in a timeshare lecture and you really just buy because you don't want to be in there anymore. But I'm not sure that's how things are actually done, but that, you know, that's what you see on TV and in the movies.
Going to say, I mean, look, a lot of people learned about timeshares through the South Park episode. You know, I don't know if you guys have seen that.
Yeah, I know exactly which one you're talking about.
There's a lot of the younger generation learned about it that way, you know, your grandparents' timeshare. But look, I mean, you know, it's a high pressure sale. You know, yeah. They've mastered the craft as far as selling timeshares. What I tell people is I've mastered my craft as far as getting them out. Yeah. You know, so there, it's typically, you know, it's a 4 to 6 hour high pressure sales presentation. The one thing that I'll tell you that a lot of people don't realize is that these timeshare salespeople, they have a get out of jail free card in that contract. There's a little paragraph that states in most of these contracts that you're agreeing to the written terms of the agreement, not what the sales representative may or may not have said to you.
Wow.
That's a crucial statement. So, I mean, they could say things to you. If they have that little statement in there, they could say things to you like, hey, you know, we're buying them back from you. You ever want to get out of this thing? You know, I bought one last week back. You know, he made a $10,000 profit. They could literally say whatever. It was a license to lie. The New York Attorney General a few years back actually took issue with that, and he got a couple of resorts to actually jump on board. I believe it was only two. I could be mistaken, but I believe there was two resorts that said, you know what, we're going to take out our contracts moving forward. But what of the millions of timeshares that they sold, you know, prior to 2013? And again, that was just two resorts. That said, you know what, we're going to take that out.
We hear so much of the horror stories. Is there such thing as a good timeshare then?
Oh, look, and this is what I tell people, guys, the resorts are beautiful in most cases, right? I mean, there are some aging resorts where they're not putting money back in, but for the most part, guys, the resorts are beautiful, but the contracts associated with them are toxic. They lock you in. And here's the other thing I'd tell people, look, for the most part, you can go to these same resorts without the burden of ownership. You can still rent them. So, you know, is there such thing as a good timeshare? When you use it, you know, and I'd say this, if you got a timeshare that was paid in full, that didn't have a mortgage associated with it, because again, they're selling these timeshares. I'm going to use air quotes here on my end, quote unquote, new timeshares. They sold $9 billion worth, a little over $9 billion worth of quote unquote, new timeshares last year.
Wow.
I just wrote an article that's going to be released here in the next 30 days. I call it the $9 billion secret. The secret is you could have had one for free. Had you come to me, I would have saved you the 4 to 6 hour high-pressure sales presentation. I would have given you a 45-minute education and an exit strategy, a real one for when you want out of it. You know, that's something where I refer to in the article is that's what I call instant vacation equity. You know, the salesman will tell you, you're making an investment, you're a vacation. It's not a, now they have to come out and tell you it's not a financial investment. You know, at least the industry leaders are, right? Because it's true. Timeshares are not a financial investment. They are not an asset. They are a liability.
So you mentioned that a lot of people kind of learned what timeshares are from South Park episodes. So the let's say the millennial generation who didn't really know what timeshares are, we're kind of learning about it later in our lives. Do you see the marketplace for timeshares kind of going down? Because yeah, yep. I look at timeshares the same way I kind of look at Airbnb, but Airbnb is less pressure. I can get it almost anytime I want to. And it's almost, it seems like the exact same experience I would probably get with a lot of these timeshares out there.
Look, they realize they need to market to the millennial generation, and they're doing that right now. And I tell you right now, guys, and this is what I say. It doesn't matter who you are, what education level you have. It doesn't matter if you're 19 or 90. Nobody's immune to these sales tactics. They're that powerful. Man, you put somebody in a room for 4 to 6 hours and you start using phrases like, it's an investment in your 401V. Well, you and I know the 401V is a made-up term.
V, but with them, that's a good one.
V, vacation. It's an investment in your vacation. Hey.
But oh, that's awesome.
4 to 6 hours, you might walk out of there, you hear that enough. I think we made an investment, honey. This is going to be fantastic because they're using those. So it's a fun way for them to be able to use the word. It's an investment. It's an investment in your vacation. Guys, it's not an investment. It's a liability. You're not going to return any money out of the instant you walk out of there. It's actually a negative. You're going to have to pay somebody like me to actually terminate that contract or find a new owner for it or to get you out of it.
So I can't just exit, return, or sell my timeshare in like a marketplace if I ever decide to?
Well, there were so many places that were shut down, these listing companies. I forget the name of the show. You know what? I shouldn't even mention the name on this podcast either. But these listing companies came in and they were charging, you know, $2,000, $1,000, $500. There was one place that actually went to court and it was published in their responses. Imagine the guy sitting on the stand and he said, look, you listed, you know, over 1,000 timeshares on your website and you charged, I'm just going to say $2,000 a piece. How many sold? And the guy said 8. The lawyer said 8%. He said, no, 8. And that was over like, I don't know, 5 years. Look, there's no resale value for these things, right? And it's tough to duplicate that sales pitch. It's tough to get somebody in a room, hammer them for 4 to 6 hours. You know, when these guys bought, that's an emotional sale too. You're on vacation. You know, a lot of our clients were actually drunk when they purchased. But you know what? They had a good time. They went down there. They're on vacation. It's tough to pump that ether in the room and that excitement and get everybody going again when you're trying to sell this thing that you know is a liability, not an asset. And the next person has to make that emotional sale himself. But perhaps that's why nobody owns more timeshares than existing timeshare owners. The resorts keep selling them. Wow. You know, hey, how about an additional week, an upgrade? You know, that's where most of our folks own more than one.
And it's funny because Kevin and I talk about that all the time in some of our bootstrap masterminds, how like if someone buys from you, they're more likely to buy from you again, right? So perfect mm-hmm. example.
Yeah. You know, with us, I mean, we're one and done, you know? So it's
no upsell there.
Yeah, right. I mean, so, you know, I mean, hey, tell a friend, but you know, that's why we handle our customers with kid gloves, because, you know, they mean the world to us. We got one shot at them to be able to walk away and have a good experience.
So Gordon, tell us a little bit more about NewtonGroupTransfers.com. If our listeners maybe have that timeshare that they need to offload, in some way, how can you help them more?
Well, at Newton Group Transfers, we actually educate the consumer first. And as you guys started at the beginning of the podcast, we just came out with the first timeshare consumer's exit guide that's ever been written. And it helps level the playing field because, as I mentioned before, whenever you say you got a million people that are looking to get out, it brings in the sharks. And it also brings in some people that, you know, kind of cut corners. If you're a timeshare owner and you're looking to get out, I highly recommend that you get educated first. And the first thing you should do is go to our website and download a free copy of the Consumer's Guide to Timeshare Exit. Look, guys, it's a quick read. It's 16 pages long. At the end of it, there's a checklist. So you can actually help. That'll help you, whether you're using us or somebody else, how do they match up? Because there's a lot of what I call marketing puffery out there as well, too. You know, these timeshare exit companies, you hear them on the radio or, you know, even on the internet or whatever it is, it'll say, we get you out of your money back. Well, that sounds pretty good. But unless you read the consumer's guide, you won't know to ask for the next step, which is a financial commitment. You need that 100% money back guaranteed back by some form of financial commitment or financial protection from that company. You know, the other thing that you'll learn in the guide is we have attorneys on staff. We're going to legally exit your timeshare. Man, that is no, if that attorney doesn't represent you, then you do not have legal representation. It is no different. Honey, I got my car. I did the oil change at this Quick Lube because they had an attorney on staff. Did the attorney change your oil? Well, I don't know. He might have overseen it. Okay, well, if there's a problem, what's happening? That attorney is actually representing the oil change company, not you. So what we do is we first educate, and then we show them how we're different, and we show them real protections that they need when they go through this transfer exit process. Whether you're hiring an attorney, you know what you're looking for. And we offer both. We'll hire an attorney to represent the client directly, or we'll do a simple transfer of ownership. But you have to know what you're talking about. Experience consultation is key. And the fact that, you know, I see these people get on there and say, well, I'm a former timeshare salesman, so I know this works. No, you don't. I'm a former timeshare owner myself, so I know how this works. No, you don't. Unless you actually went through the process and wrote the process and documented every step and you understand what it takes and you've met with the attorneys, you've sat down with them, you understand this process, you don't know anything, you know, and you certainly don't know what protections to offer consumers. And that's why I tell people, guys, get the guide. Start with the knowledge. It's power. It'll help level the playing field. Whether you use us or somebody else, just at least get the knowledge, because I'm so sick of seeing people come to me after they've been burned. Mm. It really lengthens the process too.
Absolutely. That sounds awesome. I'm definitely going to download and check it out. So I appreciate you providing that to our listeners.
You wouldn't believe what comes across my desk. I've got a 83-year-old gentleman went back to his resort and said, I'm done with it, guys. I'm going blind. I have medical issues. I just want out. Well, I'm sorry, sir. You've got a deeded week. In order for you to qualify for exit program, you must be converted to points. Guy says, okay, fine. Converts to points. 2 weeks later, he gets his package. He calls him up and says, all right, guys, I got the points package. Now, can you let me out? Oh, I'm sorry, sir. You're going to have to pay the $45,000 mortgage off before you do that, which tacked on to his other mortgage payment. So now he's owing on mortgages because he bought an additional week over $100,000 in his mortgages. Guys, what's happening is just crazy, because the salespeople, they have a get out of jail free card. And you know what? When the management, the executive staff sits down and says, oh my goodness, hey, you know what? Boy, he shouldn't have done that. You know, mea culpa, I'm sorry. You know, that's only when they're held their feet to the fire. There's some crazy stories out there, and I see them all the time. Well, and that's why I tell people, you know, when they say, you know, how come I can't go back to the resort? Now the resorts are turning that into another sales pitch. You know, I tell them, look, that's the worst thing you should do. Guys, you know, nobody owns more timeshares than existing timeshare owners. You know, they're good at what they do. And they don't have cancellation departments. They have retention departments, believe me. I know, because I talk to these people after they come see me.
Wow. All right. Well, now it's time to wrap things up with our frugal tip of the week. And this week, I just wanted to kind of remind people to think about their diet. And, you know, I've been going through this personally a little bit lately. In the past, I remember we got our family's grocery budget down to like $400 a month, and it was pretty nuts. And then I just, you know, I thought I was eating healthy, and then I took a look back and I was like, you know what? I think I'm being a little too frugal here, trying to be, you know, stretch a little too thin. I said, you know, I really don't want to sacrifice quality, especially for, you know, all the things going into my body. I mean, we are biological, you know, organisms here, right, that operate off what we, you know, consume into our mouths. So I was like, you know, I really don't want to sacrifice the quality that's going into me, because ultimately, if you think about it, it could and a lot of times does lead to increased health cost, right, or down the road, or other problems because you chose to, you know, sacrifice and not put quality foods into your body. So I definitely, you know, just a reminder to kind of rethink your diet. I was looking up, I've been doing a lot of research over the past few months. Anyone following me on Twitter has probably seen some of that stuff out there. But it was something like 95 to 98% of people don't get the daily nutrition that they need. So I think I was like, I was shocked when I read that, you know, just, you know, there's much more than just what we see, the macronutrients, wherever, you know, we see the protein, carb and all that, you know, there's all these micronutrients and minerals that we need as well that we're not getting through a lot of the foods we eat. So, wow. You know, a big thing I noticed, you know, was just, I mean, you could, there's all kinds of diets out there, right? And you can make your own decisions, right? Which I've kind of done myself. And one of the big things I see across the board, you know, is just with a lot of these healthy diets and ones that, you know, give you the nutrition you need, the biggest thing, like the bottom of your pyramid most of the time should be vegetables. I mean, really, I mean, I see that common theme across the board, you know, your vegetables and fruits, and then cutting out, like all diets seem to talk about, you know, cutting out that added sugar. Like, you know, I mean, that sugar gets immediately absorbed into your organs, unlike sugar from your produce, from fruit or something. It gets absorbed slower, doesn't have spike in your blood sugar levels like you see with that sugar. Refined grain and oils do the same thing as well to your blood sugar levels, and you know, we talk about all the fats in those as well. But you know, I just, when we think about like our biggest killers out there and our, you know, the largest healthcare cost, the number one is heart disease, right? And then you got, you know, diabetes, cancer, autoimmune diseases, obesity. Like, these are the top ones. And to me, they are diet controlled diseases for the most part, right? I mean, most of the cases we see could have been prevented or slowed down or just even reversed, I've seen, based on the diet that you're intaking. So, I mean, that's pretty remarkable to say. I mean, of course, some of the stuff's genetic. There's other things in the world that can cause these diseases too, right? And there's conflicting information across all these diets. But I think it's worth just kind of reminding yourself to kind of sit back and think about, hey, you know, how important is my diet? At least what I do personally is it just doesn't come into the house. So, like, you know, the stuff I want to eat, that's all that's coming in the house, because, or if it's in the house, I'm going to eat it, first of all. And then if there's something I do want to try, or maybe I'm having a craving or something, then I have to physically leave the house and go, maybe when we go out to eat or something, maybe we'll treat or something, you know, but that's like a little micro cost that kind of prevents me from doing that on top. So just a reminder there, you know, don't sacrifice quality. Really understand, you know, good whole foods that are out there that you should be intaking. I'll probably dive into this further in a future episode too on exactly what I'm doing. But I don't know, Kevin, what do you think? I know you've done a lot of diet research in the past. You believe a lot can be prevented based on what you're eating.
Oh yeah, a ton can be prevented based off what you're eating. I've done a lot of research around the ketogenic movement, which is high fat, low carbohydrate, and moderate protein, not really a high protein diet. But the studies that really show, if you go back 100 years, things like heart disease were not prevalent though the way that they are today, just because we did not have the processed food, the sugar, the type of food that we're very akin to in this day and age.
The Western diet, right?
Yeah, it really didn't become a thing until the 40s and 50s. And that's when they started seeing all these really healthy, one of the books I read said, you had all these really healthy guys that were dying from heart attacks, and there was really no reason for it other than, oh, they're eating more fat. Well, they were eating more processed food, and their sugar intake was skyrocketing, whereas years and years before, it wasn't really a thing at all. There's been cases of people put it on carb-restrictive diets that have actually gotten rid of their cancer. There's an entire ranch in Texas. I don't remember if it's in Austin or Dallas, but they actually do experiments with dogs. They take terminally ill dogs who have cancer, and they put them on carb-restricted diets. And they've had amazing turnarounds in months from just controlling diets of these different dogs. They call Alzheimer's type 3 diabetes because the sugar and the way that it affects your body. You know, you have the first stage, and which is just messing with your body's ability to process sugars. And to regulate sugars. Well, when that's taken to an extreme, it processes how your brain is fueled and how nerve connections connect with each other. Well, Alzheimer's is really just the breaking down of those nerve connections. That's why people forget things. They don't remember things that they should remember. And it's been called many times type 3 diabetes exactly for that reason. I think it's fascinating just the problems that a lot of us have is really, really can be contributed to our diets. And if you spend a little bit of time reading, I think reading is really important to figure out, you know, you're being, we say with financial products, and I think you and I were having a discussion just yesterday about this. There are financial products out there that are dedicated to making sure that you never get out of the financial rat race. And the same is for health and food. There are products out there, there are companies and industries that are dedicated to making sure that you're buying their product. And it doesn't matter if it makes you sick and kill you. It's you're buying their product and that's all that matters.
Yeah. So, shame when profits get in the way. Exactly.
Exactly. I mean, look at Big Sugar. Look at
corn.
Yeah, corn. Yeah. Look at all these food. It's food industry. It's you need to look at them the same way that people looked at Big Tobacco 10 years ago. They are industries dedicated to just hawking their product, as harmful as it is. But those industries have been around for 80 years.
I think that plays across the board. True. I mean, look, we're talking about timeshares, right? I mean, how ridiculous is that? That, you know, they know they're selling a liability and not providing an exit form, right? I mean,
selling their soul.
This can be picked. Right. But I mean, it stands the test of time, right? I mean, like you had said, these tobacco industry has been around for years. It's nothing new. I think wherever there's a buck to be made, it crosses that path sometimes. And unless you have solid leadership, you have to take a look at that because inevitably it could potentially go down that path where you start doing wrong, you know, profits are too good or you're beholden to the shareholders, you know?
Absolutely. And you were talking about just getting back from the gym before this podcast. So you have a little health conscious going on over there.
Oh, mercy. Yeah. I've got to lose some weight, man. You got to stay healthy to stay in the game. Absolutely.
Well, if you're listening and have a question on your mind or a frugal tip to share, hop in the Frugal Cashmates community at twofrugaldudes.com and surround yourself with your fellow cashmates in this never-ending school of personal finance. Every month, I also give away a free copy of my book, The Early Retirement Roadmap to a Lucky Cashmate, and you'll get a free preview by joining the community at twofrugaldudes.com.
And we want to take a moment to thank Gordon for joining us today. And also thank you to our fellow cashmates for your precious time. We know that you have a lot of podcast choices out there, and we're really thankful that you've taken the time to listen to us. We'll make sure that everything we've talked about in this episode is in our show notes. And if this episode's been especially helpful to you, please share it with your friends and family, coworkers, significant others, random people on the street. We really don't care who you tell, but make sure you tell everyone. We would greatly appreciate it. Thanks so much. Cha-ching.